Hello, and welcome to episode 15 of the DX Mentor podcast, The De-Expeditions of Joe, W-A-G-E-X. Thank you for joining us. This episode is sponsored by ICOM America, maker of the finest radios and accessories for your amateur radio station, and by the Daily DX, the best source for real-time DX information. This episode is also sponsored by the Southwest Ohio DX Association, one of the premier DX clubs in the nation. I'm Bill, AJB, the DX Mentor. My guests are DX gurus that we can all learn from. In this episode, we will attend a detailed discussion on the highlights and lowlights of some of the 62 de-expeditions that our guest of honor, Joe, W-A-G-E-X, has made. Also, we'll be joined by Brian, 88FD, and Don Greenbaum, N1DG. Joe and Don may very well have been on over 100 de-expeditions in total and have done several together. They have a lot to share, and I know you're going to enjoy this. Before we get started, I'd like to pass on congratulations to Bob McCullough. In the February or March timeframe, you may recall that I mentioned Bob, that I had spent a week with Bob on a vacation trip. And every day we seemed to talk about ham radio and the really fun attributes of radio in general and chasing DX. And I knew Bob was interested. Lo and behold, he studied and went down and passed his test a couple weeks ago. And I just got an email earlier that he is now Kilo Echo 8 Yellow Springs Radio, or KE8YSR. So congratulations to Bob. Welcome to the fraternity. I can't wait to get you on the air and can't wait to get you on the podcast. So for now, let's move up frequency a little bit and give a listen to our gurus. Good evening and welcome to the DX Mentor podcast tonight. I'm Bill, AJB, your host. And tonight we're going to review a number of de-expeditions, and they all have one person in common, and that's Joe, W-A-G-E-X. Joe just finished his 62nd de-expedition, we're just going to talk about some of the highlights and the lowlights and some of the good and bad times. And I think you'll find it interesting. Over the last 5 or 6 months, I've gotten a few emails from people wondering about how do I get on a de-expedition, how do I get started, what's the commitment? So I thought this would be a good way to answer some of that and just have a good time and sit back and kind of learn about this. I've been in ham radio since 1971, and the more I find out about the commitment these guys have to make on de-expeditions, the more I'm amazed at it. It is unbelievable impact on themselves individually, on their finances, on their families, on their time at work, and thank God they do it. I thought it was time to turn around and say thanks and see what's going on. So our guest tonight, we'll start with Brian, Alpha Delta 8 Fox Delta. Brian, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hey, yeah, good to be here. Brian Baith. I have not been ham nearly as long as any of you guys, just about the last 5 years. Once I started kind of chasing DX, I really fell in love with it. Joined Swedexa. It's a great, great club. I'm taking over the DX forum, the Hamvention DX forum. So really looking forward to learning from all you guys and contributing where I can.
Well, thanks, Brian. You've already made a big impact on our club and we appreciate it. We have a special guest that we flew in from the East Coast, Don Greenbaum, N1 Dog. What's your favorite?
Phonetics.
Yeah, phonetics for N1DG.
Dog-on.
Okay. So Don, go ahead. Tell us about yourself.
Okay. Got licensed in 61 at age 10. Got my first taste of DX back in the Don Miller days. Went off the air for a while for college, came back in the late 70s, and I've been chasing DX. I'm at 3180 on the challenge. That means I have no life. I've been on a number of DX expeditions, including one with our buddy here, Joe, and treasure of NCDXF. I think that pretty much says it all.
All right. And boy, 3180 in the challenge. I don't even think I can count that high. That's terrific. Yeah. Well done. Congratulations.
It just means I have very few things left to work.
Yeah.
Well, you can always start over, QRP or something, you know.
Life's too short for QRP.
And finally, Joe, W-A-G-E-X. Joe?
Well, I got licensed in 1970. And when I opened that envelope from the FCC, I think that was the point where I really got hooked on DXing. I've been a DXer ever since I opened that envelope up. Been on 62 trips, some of them large, some of them small, one man, a lot of them. But I'm just a DXer all the day. You can come and look at my logs, and of course I'll work anybody, but my logs are pretty much filled up with DX.
Okay. Now, one of the first ones you went on was December of 88, if I recall, by looking at your sheet. And that was ZF2NF to Grand Cayman. Kind of got you off the schneid and said, all right, I've been doing this for a few years. Let's go to Grand Caymans and operate.
Well, Janet and I have always sort of been travelers. We like to get out and about. So we went on a family vacation to Grand Cayman. And so that was one of my first trips. I had a dipole, and I hung it on the on the balcony railing, and I had an old Yaesu radio, and hooked it all up, got started, got working some DX, and for sure was hooked. Yeah, that was an interesting little trip, and ZF1EJ, I think, Eden. I still work this guy. He was in charge of the desaltering plant for the island. And we took a tour of that, just the three of us and him, of course. And we have been friends ever since.
I heard you've been known to go to Bermuda and just sit in front of the radio the entire time, ignoring the surf, the sea, the boats, the fish.
Bahamas.
Yes.
Yes.
Bahamas. Not Bermuda.
Yeah, never been to Bermuda. They won't allow me in, I think. But yes, I go like on my last trip. We just got back a week ago. I've had a bout with skin cancer, and I just don't want to be out in the sun anymore than what I have to. So for last many years on my single D expeditions, I just sit in the room and just hammer away at them.
Okay.
And love every minute of it until my back hurts. And I get up and walk around a little bit and sit back down. And of course, with FT8, you can key the transmitter and you can walk around the kitchen or the bedroom or whatever to loosen up and still make contacts.
Okay. Don, what was your first trip and what got you to go?
My first expedition was I had business in the Middle East. And I met one of the rulers and mentioned ham radio and said, you know, A6 is one of the rarest things going. And he said, well, I lived in Texas in college and I knew a ham. He said, if I get my license now, and by the way, when I met him, I didn't know who he was. And he said, if I can get a license, can you get me a radio? And I'm thinking, well, A61AC, which was Muhammad Hamdan, took a year to get his license, and he was the Minister of Health. And I knew him from my, believe it or not, Commodore computer days in the early 80s. And he was our dealer in Dubai. So I said, well, you know, there's a ham there that I know, A61AC, Muhammad Hamdan. And remember, back in the 80s, Dubai was tiny. It was a little town. And the following day, he came to the computer show where I was at, and he said, I got my license, and get me a radio and come back and teach me how to operate. And I'm thinking, who is this guy? So the guy that introduced us, I said, who is that guy? And he said, oh, he's one of the Al Maktoums. Well, he was the head of the Dubai Municipal Council. So he went to their equivalent of the FCC, said, I want a license. And they said, yes, sir. And so I went back, and for years, every year when there was the Jitex computer show, I'd go and operate for a week. So that was my first taste of a de-expedition.
So you almost got it whether you wanted it or not.
That's right.
Yeah. Joe, one of the ones I wanted to talk to you about a little bit, I believe your first, what I would call huge de-expedition was to Wake, K9W. I think I'm trying to look at the list.
You know, I think he was on Midway.
It was on Midway.
That's right. Yep, I'm back here. So tell me about the Midway trip.
Well, the Midway trip was a good trip. That's where I met my friend Don with us tonight. And overall, it was an excellent trip, I thought. Like most DX expeditions, it had its little problems. First thing, we all met in Honolulu, and we was getting ready to get on the airplane the next morning, and the airplane had a oil leak. So we couldn't go across a couple thousand miles of ocean with an oil leak. So the mechanics took off. They thought they had it fixed. And Don, correct me on all this. They thought they had it fixed, and they would take off and they would fly for 20 minutes or a half hour, and the leak would appear. They could see the oil coming out of the engine area onto the wings. Excuse me. And they would come back to Honolulu, and from our hotel, we could see the airport, and we had the wing number, so we was keeping track of the aircraft, and we could see them circling around and circling, and then coming back to the airport, landing, and then all of a sudden, all the hoods would come up on the airplane, on the engines. So they would pressure clean it off and try to find this leak. And this went on for several days.
3 days. Really?
3 days.
They kept telling us it was fixed.
Yeah.
They take off just for a test run. And yeah, they land, and we watch, and boom, everything got opened.
Oh, my God.
Back to the airport, the hoods come up, wash it off again. And like Don said, for 3 days.
Until we got Joe out there on the tarmac, and he took some bubble gum, and he plugged the leak. So
fixed it.
Some duct tape.
They did fix it,
and the FAA approved it.
Nice.
So you had to be a little nervous though when they're taking off. Like, okay, did they really fix it this time? Or
yeah, and then I was sitting up front in the first passenger seat, and across the aisle from me was a guy in a work uniform, in a blue work uniform, and I asked him, what was he doing on the flight? And he said, well, if anything went wrong with the oil leak, he was on the airplane. Well, I'm not sure how he was going to fix it.
That's the funny thing. We were in the air for like 4 hours. What's he going to do? Wow. Climb on the radio? Yeah. There aren't too many landing strips between Honolulu and Midway.
Oh, yeah. God.
So that was, and during the time that we was in the hotel, because it got down, were we going to cancel or postpone the trip? So Tom Harrell and Dave Johnson were our leaders and co-leaders. And so we met several times a day trying to figure out, what are we going to do if this plane is not operable? We're really between a rock and a hard spot. And Don, with his international connections, he gets online and tries to find other aircraft. Well, there was other aircraft available, but they were not close to us, and they were quite expensive, way out of our budget range for the aircraft that we had already chartered. So it got a little tense there, back and forth, trying to figure out what we should do, how would we refund the money if we completely postponed the trip or canceled it. And so It was interesting 3 or 4 days, no question.
So I imagine you have people back here bugging you like, okay, why aren't you on the air? What's going on? And so that couldn't have been any fun either.
Yes. People wanting to know, where are you at? Why aren't you on the island? And
so we kept posting pictures of Joe on the beach with a daiquiri.
Yes.
And we just kept saying, we'll go when Joe's ready.
Don
was the foul guy.
Don's been all over, but Don's been on some very high profile trips. And I think the general consensus is that when us as de-expeditioners go out on these trips, that we are really having a good time. It's beautiful, sunny days. Don's been out in the South Pacific where, it's cold, ice, absolutely terrible conditions. And I've been quite a bit to the Pacific, where it can get quite hot. So it's not a piece of cake by a long shot. Wouldn't you agree, Don?
Yeah, I mean, being on the equator, it's over 100 and the hot sun's setting up. When we were setting up on South Orkneys, it was below freezing with a gale and snow. You have the right idea going to the Cayman Islands.
So one of the challenges to me would always be the logistics, right? You got to remember, you know, radios and chairs and coax and now networking cable switches. And you also have to remember barrel connectors, right, Joe?
That's right. So we're on Midway. We get the okay that the aircraft is able to fly with no oil leaks. And we had a fella that we had an open spot. So we had a fella, Charlie Wooten, NF4A, and we invited him to come along. He leaves Florida and flies out and meets us. But when we get ready to load the airplane, they said that we've got too many people.
Well, we had to bring the engineer.
Yeah.
The plane cracked, the engine.
So we left Charlie. Charlie volunteered. He says, I was the last man asked and the last man to pull in here. And he says, I'll just stay because tomorrow there was another aircraft coming out that could bring Charlie. And a guy by the name of Bruce Butler, who was the treasurer for Northern Cal DX Foundation.
President,
that's right, I'm sorry. He says, I'll stay back with Charlie. So these two guys stayed, Don and I and the rest of the team go out to Midway, and we're starting to run our coax cable. And like the 160 antenna might be 400, 500, 600 feet out along the water. And we did not have any barrel connectors, not a one, to put these cables together with.
So, and the Radio Shack on Midway was closed.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. So we called back to Honolulu and talked to Charlie and Bruce and told them to go to rent a car and go to every Radio Shack in Honolulu and buy every barrel connector they had, because we weren't sure how many we needed, but we needed plenty. And so the boys did that. And when they arrived, we met them in the golf cart on the tarmac and got those barrel connectors in them, obviously.
You had everything else set up at the, so there's coax laying all over the place like this, right?
Nice.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, that's crazy.
So then on Midway, I don't know if Don remembers this or not, but when we went into Midway, Brown, what was that boy's name, the manager?
Scott Brown.
Scott Brown.
Matt Brown.
Matt Brown, that's right. Very good young man, and he was the manager on the island. He was our boss, to make a long story short. And so we went to a debriefing on what we could do on the island as ham radio operators and places that we should not be, and that was the debriefing. But one thing that he made clear, that if he found a dead bird, we were gone. We would have to tear down and leave. So as we walk out of the debriefing, going back to our barracks, I told Tom Harold, our leader, I says, Tom, I get up early every morning, always before daylight. And I says, I'll walk the beach. Don't worry about those birds. So
truth be told, we had on every antenna about 50 streamers.
Yes.
It was so noisy on that beach. Joe didn't sleep at all.
Yes. Yeah. And we went through a tremendous amount of work putting these streamers, as Don say, on all the guy lines. But it made a beautiful picture on our QSL car. I will say that.
Let's take a break to learn about the Daily DX.
Hey, I just poured you a cup of coffee. You look pretty happy. How'd you do?
I worked him on the third call. Can you believe it?
You worked him on the third call? Seriously? I thought you just had that little pistol station.
I do, but I have a secret weapon.
A secret weapon? What is it?
Information. I knew when they were on the air, their operating habits. Heck, I even knew the equipment they're using. I just had to be there when they came up on the band. I even beat the spotting network.
Wow, how'd you manage all that?
I get the Daily DX from Bernie, W3UR. In addition to the weekly and daily bulletins, I also receive special notices when things change in real time. I feel that I'm always on top of every DXpedition.
So now you just need to confirm it, right?
Yep, that's it. Bernie even helps me with that, giving me QSL routes and QSL managers if they don't use LOTW. The Daily DX is a DX bulletin sent via email to you Monday through Friday. It includes DX news, IOTA news, QSN reports, QSL information, a DX calendar, propagation forecast, and much, much more. With a subscription to the Daily DX, you will also receive DX news flashes and other interesting DX tidbits. Bernie's been an integral part of my confirming over 300 entities and WAZ while operating a modest station.
W3UR Bernie is the editor, a member of the DX Honor Roll, a member of the 3000 Challenge Club, as well as the editor of the How's DX column in QST. He is uniquely positioned to have his finger on the pulse of the DX community and shares this information weekly. Why not let Bernie be your secret weapon?
You can get a free 2-week trial at www.dailydx.com.
Now let's go have that cup of coffee and tune around.
As I look at the list, and I should have started here first, maybe, in July of 99, this is kind of like This Is Your Life, isn't it? You know,
yes.
You met Janet, and she was, you know, you were 38 and she was 17. You know, it's that kind of a thing. But in July of 99, you did Fiji and Tonga. And I don't think, in all the years I've known you and all the talks we've had, I don't think you've ever mentioned either one of those. Just what was that like? I mean, you were, you know, that was back, you just started DXing, you know, 10 years prior or something. So how in the heck did you get to Fiji and Tonga, and what was that like?
Well, we were, the reason I never did mention that to you, Bill, is because we were trying to forget about it.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll go on then.
There's still a warrant for his arrest.
So my daughter, Kelly, who's also an amateur, she was in Australia studying. And so we met her in Fiji. So we go to Fiji. I had an R7, my little Yaesu radio back then. I'm an Icon guy now, but I had a Yaesu back then. And so I set my R7 up, and it has always worked around the world. And then we went to Tonga, and we took a little boat off the mainland, 45 minutes to a small little island, and I mean small island, called Fafa Island. And so at this point, something happened to my R7, had a high SWR. So I had a barrel, I had a T connector. So I made me a 17 meter dipole and put it up in the trees and worked 17 meters off of that homemade dipole, homemade on the island. Right. Wasn't homemade from home. So, and then we were scuba diving at the time. So then we got into a little scuba dive in there. But those are interesting little trips. And you always had to figure out if something, as Don well knows, being on all his trips, if something is not working, something is broke, you've got to figure out how to fix it. Because there's no hardware stores, no Lowe's, no nothing. We have been in some very, very uninhabited places.
So, Don, I don't know nearly as much about you as I do Joe, but there had to have been some time in your de-expeditioning that you look back and say, yeah, I had the same position. The antenna didn't ship, or the amplifier was missing, or the power supply died, and you had to apply some ingenuity to get things up and running.
So I think it was my second or third trip to Dubai. And I decided to bring a key with me. And as I'm going through the airport, now, my first trip, I brought an Icon 781. I brought a vertical. I brought all this stuff and nobody questioned anything. They said, what are in those boxes? I said radios. I didn't say transmitting radios, but I said radios, and got just waved through customs. Here, I have a Kier. And for some reason, the guy takes it. So, and I told everybody I was going to be on 160 the very first time A6 had been on 160, and I was going to be on 30, which is only a CW band. And I get through to where I'm going, and everybody's looking for me on 30 and 160, and I have no key. So I took two pieces of wire, and I'm sitting there.
Nice.
You know,
really?
The only thing that would have been better is spark gap transmitter.
Yes, that is great.
And I didn't get the key until I left.
Wow, no kidding.
They gave it back.
Did they ever say why?
Well, it wasn't allowed.
Yeah. It just wasn't allowed, huh?
Just wasn't allowed. They knew it was for transmitting, and I didn't have a license.
Wow.
Going through customs is always an issue, and it still is today. Although I have to say, going through the Bahamas a week and a half ago was the easiest I ever went through, I believe, customs anywhere. This time they wanted to know, what is this stuff? And we said, well, it's a radio, and they want to know about the amplifier. And I told the guy, well, that's going to make the music louder. because these islands, you know, everything is music. They got music going all over, all the boom boxes, you know. And so I thought, well, I'll just tell him, you know, it's to play music. Well, it is for my ears. But so he said, well, go on.
The best custom story I have is I was on the C90 expedition. We went from South Africa into Mozambique. Mm-hmm. And as we're traveling, we had a carnet because we didn't want to pay South African customs duties every time we went across the border. So we're leaving the country. And the South African guy at the border, I bring up the carnet because it was in my name, and I asked him to sign off on all. I mean, we had a trailer, we had a Titan X, we had 50 feet of tower. I mean, we were not traveling light. We had three cars. The guy says, well, Jerk, ZS6P was with me. He said, you have a South African with you. There's no problem here. I don't need to sign it. Just go through. Well, you know, 10 days later, we come back. And they're not letting us in because my carnet isn't signed. Oh. And finally, Jerk, who's, you know, in his late 70s, they do respect elders. He is screaming at these people that you let us through and refused to sign it. And they were trying to shake us down for money.
Yeah.
Wow. And that's got to be a little scary, right? Because you're not sure 100% what's going to happen. And
yeah, they all have weapons. And when we were in Mozambique, about every 20 miles, we were stopped by people who were armed, who wanted a toll. And Jerk would argue with these people, but they were asking for a toll for like $10. We're going, hey, the guy, let's go. It was like every 10 to 20 miles, a different police station had the roadblock looking for foreigners.
Holy cow.
We went to Janet and I and two other guys, there was four of us, went to Montenegro to put that on. And Ranko, the guy that owns the Sky Contest Club, he was our host. And he told us that when we got to Dubrovnik in Croatia, that there would be a guy pick us up. And I said, okay. And he said, he'll have a sign. I don't know, they had my last name or Joe or something. So we're at the airport. We see this guy, we got in. He is in a black shirt and pants, coal black hair, you know, dark complected, like an Italian, nothing against Italians. And I said, are you, you know, picking us up to go to Montenegro to Ranko? Yeah. And he spoke no English. So we get in the car with him, nice, black, beautiful car. The whole thing was a little scary as we look back on it. And then we had to go through a couple checkpoints. And, you know, the gate's down and we have to pull up. And, of course, he talks to them in the native language. And, of course, they win the Sierra passports. And but to make a long story short here, everything was fine. Not one issue, but you're just in foreign countries with foreign people and you don't have a clue what's looking you in the eye.
Yeah,
can get a little scary.
Yeah, I ran into that when I used to take Karen home to Rhode Island, you know, being from Cincinnati.
Nice.
Same kind of
speaking
thing.
A different language.
Yeah, right? Yeah. So I wanted to bring up Montenegro, Joe, for 2 points. One was, I believe that you and Wayne, was it Wayne McKenzie?
Yes.
You guys were the first ones to activate that. Is that correct?
As far as I know, yes. I got the certificate on the wall. Yes.
And then secondly, wasn't there something in the airplane you guys dropped like 1,000 feet and a couple of breaths or something?
Yeah. So when we were coming across the Adriatic Sea, I think we flew into France and got a connecting flight into Croatia. And coming across the Adriatic, I really thought we were going to die. That was the roughest airplane ride. I give that pilot credit. He or she, you know, handled that well. But that plane was just really rolling like that. I've been on a lot of flights, but never been scared and thought I was going to die like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And I know as someone pointed out, there's a lot of speculation about, you know, these guys are having a blast and they're operating all the hours and all this other stuff. But there's another one that jumps out to me that it almost brings tears to your eyes. And that was your whole K9W trip, right, to Wake. And the I won't even steal your thunder. You want to talk? And you know what I'm talking about. So can you take a minute and touch on that?
Yes, for sure. Guy by the name of Lou Dietrich, N2TU, was our leader, just a great guy and a great leader as far as I'm concerned. And we're on Wake Island. And it took us a couple of years to get permission. We're not sure why, other than somebody just didn't want us to go because there's nothing really high secret, in my opinion, on Wake Island. But anyway, we get there. And the reason that we got permission is that back during the war, there was 98 contractors, civilian contractors, that were murdered by the Japs. And that's the reason that we planned this trip, Lou did, and we wanted to recognize those 98 men. So we had it all set up with Boise, Idaho, at a Hammond, Boise, and these contractors were hired by a company in Boise, the same contractors, Don, that we had on Wake or on Midway.
Correct.
And so Lou set it up with the guy in Boise. There were, like, on Saturday morning at noon, we are going to announce these 98 men. And so me and Jerry Rosales was in the shack. It was in the sideband shack. And John Miller and Lou came in to go through the naming of all these men. And I had to leave because it was so tearful. And poor Lou, God love him, but he finally got through it. But the tears was running down this guy's face. It was one of the most moving moments that I think I had ever experienced. And Jerry and I both had to walk outside from keep from crying ourselves.
Wow.
But it was just a marvelous way that we honored those guys. And for that reason, we got permission to enter Wake Island. It's not an easy place to get to.
I imagine. Well, that's pretty amazing. This sounds like a great time to hear from one of our sponsors.
From base stations to more portable models, ICOM has the best radio for working your favorite bands this summer. Whether outside enjoying sunny skies or inside by the AC, stay cool with ICOM. Explore the world of microwave with ICOM's new SHF portable, the IC905. This all-mode rig covers 2 meters, 70 centimeters, 1.2 gig, 2.4 gig, and the 5.6 gig bands, and with the optional CX10G transverter, 10 gig. This transceiver also has a few industry firsts under its belt. It's the first to support the five major global bands from VHF to SHF. The first PoE-empowered RF module designed to be at the base of the antenna to eliminate signal loss. And the first to be compatible with amateur TV and analog FM mode. Other features include
a large 4.3-inch touchscreen color LCD, real-time high-speed spectrum scope and waterfall display, easy digital mode settings, high-performance GPS antenna which is supplied, full D-Star functionality in DV/DD modes, and an SD card slot.
Aim higher and enter the world of SHF. The IC7300 is a high-performance innovative HF transceiver with a compact design that will far exceed expectations. This innovative HF transceiver digitizes RF before various receiver stages, reducing the generated inherent noise in different IF stages. This is the radio that changed the way entry-level HF is designed.
The 7300 includes RF direct sampling, 15 discrete bandpass filters, a large 4.3-inch color touchscreen, real-time spectrum scope, and an SD memory card slot.
The real HF fun starts here. For the love of ham radio. For more information about ICOM's amateur offerings, visit icomamerica.com/amateur.
Don, I want to ask you about some of your experiences. I want to take Joe to Swain's Island in a minute, but I'm sure that on these de-expeditions, I mean, it's not like, you know, you're about to land in Tuvalu and it's like, oh, you know, I think I hurt my wrist. I got to go to the doctor. So have you had, without, of course, naming names, but have you had experience where people have gotten injured on these and now the whole priority changes?
Well, the most serious injury we had was on the South Orkneys, covered with seal poop or penguin poop or whatever. And one of the guys twisted his ankle. It wasn't enough to cancel the de-expedition, but we don't go anywhere without a doctor on any remote island. It's just like, you've got to have a medic. We took one. I was on Wake as well back with Tom Harrell back in 1996. Yeah. And we brought a doctor, even though they had a medical center, but it wasn't staffed. We even brought one to Midway. Remember, Joe?
Sure.
We brought one to Midway. On Baker, we actually had a member who was having heart issues. And he never did make it to the island to operate. He did make one trip to the island. That could have ended that trip right then and there. That was the most serious. Now, he didn't get injured because he was on the island or heat stroke. He just, bad timing, had an issue. So you never know what's going to cut a trip short.
What was it, your C9, the expedition where there was a gentleman who made it back? Everything was done, got back to the hotel, and then had a heart attack?
He actually got home.
Oh, he got home. Okay.
He passed away within a month of the de-expedition. But
yeah.
Did the stress of the trip do it? You never know. You know, gotcha. A month's a long time for a cardiac event.
Right. Unfortunately, they're both, you know, kind of linked. So that's why I was curious.
It was horrible for us because we had just spent a month with the guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Joe, you had something, again, without naming names, but you had a particular incident on Swain's that struck me as interesting, because I'm not in the best of shape. And I thought about, boy, if I ever had to do this, you know, you got to tell them everything and take everything into account. If you leave anything out, that could really prove to be a problem. And I think you guys ran into that.
Yes, we did. So when we, as Don well knows, whenever we plan these de-expeditions, we have a medical form that we want the operator to fill out, and the doctor gets the medical form. And if the doc says, no, this guy can't go, he's got high blood pressure or whatever the issue is, if the doctor says he can't go, then he can't go. We just don't take that individual and we look around for, you know, for another operator. So we're going to Swain's. We had 20 operators, and we rented a boat called the Lady Naomi. That's a different story we can talk about in a minute. So we're on the Lady Naomi, big ship, 200-foot vessel, and a fella late at night, most of us were in our bunks, and this fella gets cut, and there was a piece of pipe, the way they explained to me, sticking out, that was broken off and was rusty. And he comes along and he hits that pipe with his leg and really laid him open, his leg. So the like Don says, we had a doctor always with us. So the doctor laid him on a kitchen table in the mess hall and sewed him up. And then they called me and Craig Thompson, my co-leader. And we immediately went down to see what was going on. And the doctor says, hey, this guy, because we're going to Midway, he says, this guy cannot get off of the boat. We cannot let him be contaminated with seawater. That would not be a good issue. So I had a hard time convincing this guy that he was going back to American Samoa, that he was not going to be able to stay on the island and operate. So he went back to American Samoa, told the captain of the boat to, there was only three or four guys on the boat, to keep an eye on him. And he went back to American Samoa and was in ICU for 4 or 5 days. So this guy was hurt. And then we also had other injuries on Swain's that didn't require a doctor. But when they got back, several of them had to go to the hospital. So it's not always a piece of cake and laying under a palm tree with a martini or a beer in your hand. It's you know, that's the impression I think so many operators have of us, but it can be very dangerous, no question.
Any time you go to one of these coral reef surrounded islands, somebody's going to get a reef infection. We always tell people to bring rubber-soled shoes so you don't get cut by the coral. But I bet there isn't more than a handful of the expeditions that have to transverse coral where somebody doesn't get a coral infection.
Wow. Yeah.
All it takes is a tiny scrape on the side of your leg. And the other thing, and Joe knows this, the food. When we were in Bhutan, there wasn't one of us that didn't get stomach poisoning.
Great.
I mean,
really?
You don't drink the water, you don't eat fresh vegetables, but in Bhutan, we all got it because when we were taking showers, the water would get in.
Really?
Oh, yes, that's how we figured it out. Nobody had anything but bottled water. We didn't eat any raw vegetables. And yet, at different times, somebody was spending his shift not at the radio, but in the job. It was like, we finally figured out it had to be in the showers.
Wow.
Yeah.
So on Swain's, Bill, that was a different trip in so many in so many ways, but we had 13 Somalians on the island with us, and they're great big strong guys and girls, you know, and so they built us a two-seater outside toilet. It was what made me think about this when Don brought that up. Lou, who was our leader on Wake Island, he was sick for a couple of days, deathly sick. And he spent 2 days in the John. He was not, poor guy was not well. And you have to remember, there's only so many operators, and we are committed to this trip and trying to get 100,000 cues or whatever. And as sick as this guy is, he, if possible, he needs to pull his trick on the radio. So it's, yeah, it takes certain people, I think Don will admit, to do this.
So Brian, you ready to pack and pick a destination? Or?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Can we pick I hear P5 is like
that I won't get infections on or anything? Yes.
You can go to P5.
That's right.
Janet, my wife, has always said that when I came off of Swain's, because it was so hot, it was 128 degrees on the beach, and that's where all the antennas are, and you have to walk the beach to go from sideband to CW stations, you know, they may be in on the edge of the beach and under a palm tree, but you got to walk the beach for a half mile to get there. And so the sun is as unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Well, and I know there were no palm trees.
Yeah. Wow. And Janet always said that when I got back from Swain's, I have never been the same. Of course, well, a lot
she
of
like you better now or better then.
You know, Don, I think what's interesting here is all these years, I didn't think Joe listened to Janet. Now I'm learning that he does.
I have a Joe story.
All right.
Okay, back to logistics. So Midway had a bowling alley. When we were there, it was closed. They had all sorts of R&R because of the amount of troops that went through Midway. And they had a bar,
yes,
which was also closed. But when you plan on logistics and you bring along Joe Pater, you don't have to worry about such things because we were on Midway for about 2 days. And we heard there was a bar. Well, it was in Joe's room. He must have bought every bottle of booze in Honolulu and packed it on that plane. And so when you wonder why Charlie Wooten didn't make the trip, it was all the overweight booze that Joe had
packed. Yeah, but when he brought back and he got the deposit on the returns, he applied that to the
I bet he did.
So I did on Wake, I did have a refrigerator. Me and a guy by the name of Joe Blackwell were rooming together. And so I had some beer in there, and this German fella who was a dear friend just passed away within the year, Franz. And this little German guy, he's real cute, short, and he knocks on my door, and I answer the door, and he says, Joe, he says, I understand you have some beer. And of course, you know the Germans and their beer. And I said, well, sure, Franz, come on in. So he and I became the best of friends. Yeah, I had him on other trips and been to his house in Germany. So it shows you that these relationships between the crew members really are everlasting.
Let's pause so we can hear from a DX club that is one of our sponsors.
DXing is even more enjoyable when you make connections with other DXers. A major sponsor of this podcast is the Southwest Ohio DX Association, or SWODEXA. SWODEXA is best known for hosting the DX Dinner and DX Forum, as well as the DXpedition of the Year Award. All these DX events are held annually in conjunction with Hamvention and are among the most well-attended and notable DX events of the year. Joining SWODEXA will give you access to a great group of DXers, an informative newsletter, preferred seating at the DX Dinner and the DX Forum, and you will be supporting DXpeditions to the top 50 needed DXCC entities. Check us out at www.swodxa.com and click on the Membership Info tab for more information and a registration form.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because one of the final notes I had about Midway, and again, you know the folks, I'll let you can use names or not use names, but at one point you pulled out of the Midway trip, right?
That's right. I just wanted to go to Midway. I just had it in my blood. Joe, you've got to go to Midway. This is a big deal. And so I was being micromanaged. And so anybody who knows me knows that just give me a job and leave me alone and check back in a week or two or whenever and see how I'm getting along. So I sent a letter out to Don and the management crew of the trip and told them I was bailing, and the person in charge called me right up and wanted to know, you know, why I was moving out. What was the problem? And I says, me being well opinionated, I said, well, you are the problem. So after that, everything was smooth. I got to go to Midway, and me and the gentleman are the best of friends today. Oh my God, yes. Yeah. But it just shows you, if you have a problem, you need to bring it up in a nice way and get it resolved.
But kudos to you for bringing it up, and kudos for him to have the ego to say, okay, you want me to handle you differently? That's fine. I'll do that.
Yes.
Midway was an interesting thing. Normally on these trips, you pick the team.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So you picked the team. So most of these people, you've been places before with, you know what their problems are. We applied, as did like four or five other groups, for years to go to Midway. And the Fish and Wildlife people, to their credit, said, hey, wait a minute. We are not going to decide among the various groups who gets to go. What we're going to do is put everybody that applied to go to Midway on an email.
Yes.
And what did they do? They sent it out at like 4 a.m., Joe, something silly like that.
Yeah.
And the first 14 people that replied,
wow,
to
really?
it was a ham radio lottery. So the first 14 people that replied to this email
got to go,
and more did, like 20. And as people dropped out, they went down the standby. Yeah.
Okay.
So I get this call from Hawaii, from Kimo, saying, did you get your email? And it was like 6 a.m. here. And I'm going like, what email? He said, man, you gotta get on this. I pick up the phone and call Tom and 4XP. And we immediately replied to this email that yes, we definitely want in. And they looked at the timestamp and pick the team. That is no way to run a D expedition. So then we had an election who would wind up running this thing. And unfortunately, I was one of the guys they picked to run this. And it was like herding cats. And that's where we met Joe Pater, because he was Johnny on the spot that morning answering the email.
It's up early, like you said before, right?
That is no way to run a de-expedition of what could have been 14 or 16 strangers.
Right.
And we had some characters on there, which we will not go into, right?
Okay.
And that's where I met Craig Thompson, K9CT. And
that was his first de-expedition ever. Right.
Yeah, and he and I have been on other D expeditions together and have co-led them together, and I brag on Craig all the time. He is a first-class act. Yeah.
And I kind of wonder, because, you know, for the, like, our newsletter, I get a lot of the D expedition articles to reprint, and it's always it's interesting to me the different nationalities that might be along. And I've always said, you know, that in the right circumstances, that could be a major issue. But then it really doesn't have anything to do with nationalities. It's everything to do with personalities, right? So have you had some issues where you had to just grab two people and say, look, we're 4,000 miles from home. You got to stay focused, or does it not really manifest itself?
Joe, you can agree with me or not, but I bet it happens once on every single trip.
Really?
It was what?
It happens on every single trip.
Yes. personalities. You know, we all try to be nice and congenial and helpful, but there's always something. And I think a lot of times what happens is that we're under a lot of pressure from the ham radio community. And so we go out and we're working hard to put up the antennas and set up the radios. And there is a lot goes on in setting this up. And we are in very adverse conditions. It is either very hot or colder than hell. And so these guys, after a while, some people can get thin skin and things
and are you, set. You get all this stuff set up and then you're awake 18 hours a day, operating, fixing, dealing with just the and Joe's been manager of many of these as I have. You have to schedule operators, but two people will always get on the wrong side of each other.
Yep.
You just wait for it to happen, and it usually happens with one or two days to go. They've reached the boiling point, and if Joe isn't there with his portable bar, you just have no way to defuse it.
Just move it over.
So you guys really don't care if AJB's whining because I've had to stay up an extra hour to try to work you on 30 meters. You really don't care, do you?
We don't care about that.
Well, in your case, Bill, you're on the list we have on the wall, who to work last.
Oh. Nice. Well, you know, it's funny because I made the comment at the club that my signal's so bad here, I'm with my vertical. I couldn't even work the Bouvet Pirate, much less work Bouvet. So,
Bill, are we out of time? Or
no, I got. If Don's got a few more minutes, I got a couple other things to touch on.
Oh, Don's got two or three days. This guy's available.
The one that I had no knowledge of, so I'm going to let you. You had sent me a note. It was PJ7E. And here's what you said, a new country, 20 inches of rain. Police said you need a four-wheel drive, heavy radio, stop for beer. So you did write this. Yes. CW station, no equipment, and an FCC guy. What does all that mean?
I forget.
Oh. Well, okay. Brian and I.
That was quick.
Must have been really good.
So, Craig Thompson that I just mentioned, Craig and I get together and we decide that there's going to be five new countries in the Caribbean. And St. Martin, depends how you want to look at it, PJ7 is going to be one of them. And I had been there on vacation. So Craig and I, we jump in an airplane and we go down there for 4 days to do some recon work to see where we ought to be set up. Because we all been through all this intermod stuff and you know, we don't want that. So I did most of the driving and we was looking for good spots. And Craig says, Joe, look way up here, up on that hill, there's some buildings, let's go up there. So sure enough, I drive up there and I says, I don't believe this is gonna work out. He says, well, why? And I said, well, look at that sign that says penitentiary. So that ain't going to work. So then we decided to have two locations. One was a house that we rented for Sideman, and the other one was a condo that we rented for CW. And of course, anybody that's been to the island, it is very commercialized. And so we did not have to pitch tents and stuff that we have done in the past. So that worked out good. So when we arrived, we arrived in the middle of a tropical storm. And we had a total of 20 inches of rain. Wow. I have never, ever been in a mess like this. So we get our car, our SUV, and get it all loaded up. And the guy that we rented the car from, the rental place, he says, just follow the guy in front of you. Don't get left or right of him. Just follow him. Because if he's going through, then you should be able to make it also. Because we don't know about the ditches and about culverts about anything. So we're going to sideband, which is clear at the other end of the island, and we had to go up over a mountain, and there was a female police officer there, and she stopped me. I was driving, and she stopped, and she says, you won't be able to go if you don't have four-wheel drive. And I said, oh, man, we're good. We got four-wheel drive, but we didn't. So we go down off of the mountain and get down into Pittsburgh, the little town. And it was very nerve-wracking because it's all this rain, the windshield wipers just on high speed. And I stopped at a little sort of like a little grocery store, and I got a six-pack of beer.
Of course.
Of course. put it in the front seat. There was me, Janet, and another fellow that Don would know very well. And so we're heading on up to this location to the house that we rented. And these roads are just absolutely flooded, pouring down, raining. And it was so nerve-wracking when we got to our house. I opened the door, and I could hear someone heaving. And I looked over, and Janet's standing next to me. So it wasn't her. So, and this other guy was a seasoned bee expeditioner. But it was so bad that this guy was so nervous that he threw up.
And yeah. Since Joe was the doctor, he gave him a beer.
Yes, exactly. He had the cure.
So I went inside with that six pack, and I drank them all. Yeah. That was the most. So then we didn't have any radios because of the wave action. We had 15-foot seas coming in to the dock area. So our boat was way out at sea to where obviously the boat was safe. And so it took 3 days for the boat to get in, the seas calmed down, the boat to get in, and we're putting on a new country. Mm-hmm. This is number one in the world because P5 had already been worked by the four Lima guy. Mm-hmm. So every country had been worked at some time, but one of these islands. So we were under pressure, and we didn't have any radios. And Dave Anderson, one of the guys, he had a little rig, but he was on CW. So we met a guy that had a 706, and we borrowed it. So we got on the air on a first time country with a 706, unheard of.
That's great.
Unheard of.
That's great.
And then the boat came in.
So I have a picture of one of your de-expeditions that I'd like, and I really don't care which one of you guys explain it. let me know. Can you see that picture?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, how about if I click the share button? That always makes a difference.
Oops.
Can you see that picture now? And for those on
the guy on the right, I think is Don, but I don't know who the nun is.
Well, do you want to
you know Joe, let me just set this up. In 2012, the Swodexa guys were searching for a dinner speaker,
right?
And they wanted something funny. So they picked two of the unfunniest guys, me and Joe. And Joe, if we tried to pull this stunt today, they'd be protesting. I mean, we'd be hung.
Yes.
But sure. I wore my dish dash from Dubai, and Sister Josephine showed up. Yes. I think that's your twin sister, I think. She,
yes,
I she sort of looks like you.
Yeah, she's the CW operator in the family.
Right. And we did a name this DXer by showing a picture of an animal and then the picture of the DXer.
Oh.
And it's amazing how many DXers look like certain wild animals.
Animals.
Oh.
And that's what we did.
You know, Don, I still have that habit.
Yes, he does. Nice.
Well, I still have that habit, and I still use it occasionally. Yeah, usually at Christmas time. Yeah.
And how did the operation go?
That's great.
So far, so good.
What we have on the screen now is Joe in his nun's costume sitting at a table. I guess field day.
This was at a bicentennial in a little town where I grew up over here, and it was just a big celebration, a bicentennial celebration, and one of the local radio clubs had this all set up. So they wanted me to get my picture taken operating a radio, so I did.
Well, I do remember. I do remember the two of you going at it. That may have been the dinner where I decided, yeah, I got to get active with this club again.
Once again, let's hear from ICOM.
Create your own band opening with the IC9700. This transceiver radio brings direct sampling to the UHF, VHF, weak signal world. This all-mode transceiver is loaded with innovative features that are sure to keep you busy.
These features include a 4.3-inch touchscreen color TFT LCD display with real-time high-speed spectrum scope and waterfall, smooth satellite operation with 99 satellite channels, and dual-watch operation and full duplex operation in satellite mode.
Expect top performance with ICOM's IC9700. And let's talk about the IC7610. It is the SDR every ham wants. This high-performance SDR can pick out faint signals in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling software-defined radio that has changed the world's definition of an SDR transceiver.
The 7610 includes RF direct sampling system, 110 dB RMDR, independent dual receiver, and dual digi select.
For the love of ham radio. For more information about ICOM's amateur offerings, visit icomamerica.com/amateur.
So Don, there's one thing I want to talk to you about if you don't mind, and it's not quite on the list here, but I love this rig in a box. I think it's absolutely, from a technology standpoint, everything about it to me is just exciting as can be. Yes. And I know that you recently operated Ducey Island from your home there, which is really exciting. But I want to tie that to, at some point, I believe you're either the NCDXF rep to the Fish and Wildlife Service, or there's some relationship there. So my loaded question simply is, do you think that the rig in the box concept is going to help us get onto some of these islands that they really don't want to have occupied? And I know I'm stealing some of Joe's thunder, but I thought, you know, I got you here. I got to ask you this.
Okay. So I am on a community group that's advising the U.S. Fish and Wildlife on rewriting the management plan for the Pacific Remote National Monuments. And what we're doing is setting up parameters on how to protect the islands. It includes places like Midway, Jarvis, Johnston, all the rare ones. It does not include Curie because that is managed by the state of Hawaii.
Yes.
And part of the management plan, and part of it's already been published, will allow for visitation by amateur radio. And I did a presentation to them showing them the rib a very short while ago. And there are some applications to visit some of these islands in the works. The rib is going to make a de-expedition to one of these possible.
Okay.
Is it going to happen next month? Is it going to happen in 3 months, 6 months? I don't make the decisions. Washington, D.C. does. But the people managing these islands are fully sold. You know, they saw what we did on Midway, 18 and tennis. And now they've seen what we did on Ducie last month, just a few weeks ago, with 6 and tennis. Nobody camping out, no latrines, no tents. I mean, we had 13 tents on Baker. And daily trips to the island, bringing food and supplies and water. And now you don't need any of this. So I think it's going to change the way permissions are obtained to go to these ecologically fragile ecosystems.
That's terrific. Were you on Baker with Hal, W8HC?
He wasn't on Baker.
Okay, he wasn't on. So
I was on Baker, yes.
Okay, what about Ralph, KZRIR or N200, either one of those guys?
No, they were not on Baker.
Okay, the reason I ask is, and I had a podcast with them 2 weeks ago, and one thing they brought up was when they were leaving, when one of them was leaving Baker at some point, it was unbelievable heat, and they have to tear everything down in this unbelievable heat. And between the setup and the teardown, they probably lost 2 or more days. Where
we lost 2 days getting it set up. You didn't lose it. It was built in the plan.
Okay.
But yes. 2 days to set up. Tearing down Baker was pretty easy. We did it during the night after the last day of operation at 8 a.m. The boat came and we loaded everything up. Teardown is always easier, but Ducie was set up by 3 people in about 6 hours. And from the time we went QRT and George went to the island, teardown took 2 hours and they were off the island.
That's great. And I also saw that, I think it was the winter edition of the NCDX newsletter, there's an update on the rig in the box, and they've actually created a vehicle now that they can take off the ship and roll right up. I'm telling you, it's just brilliant. Everything they continue to do, just. Did we lose him?
Don, okay. You're stuck.
Don's frozen.
Your mouth is open, Don, but nothing's coming out.
It's coming out.
it'll resync, but
yeah.
Okay, well.
I just wonder, Bill, rig in a box, if somebody else is going to come up and duplicate it.
Well, I guess they might, but when you've got, when NCDX is, NCDXF is fully supporting it, I mean, you know, if you and I and Brian created one, we'd go to them and they'd say, well, we've already got that, so.
Right. We don't need it.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, so. Sure. Well, Brian, do you have any questions or anything?
Joe, it seems like it's always, it seems like with all these, it's like, it's the weather, right? Like, was there anyone that was that the weather wasn't a problem?
No. You know, it's sort of like out here, if you go to field day, 1 year you may have a beautiful weather, and then next year it's all thunderstorms and all this crap and the heat. But the weather is always the big factor. If it's hot, it really takes its toll on you, but probably no more than when it's cold. It's hard to do anything wearing a pair of gloves.
Yeah.
And you got to set up all this equipment. And yeah.
Wow. So, Joe, just maybe, you know, a minute or two. It strikes me as one of the unsung heroes, or some of the unsung heroes is the family back home. And I know for you, you've said multiple times, you know, Janet's did a lot of fundraising. She sent out a lot of letters. She handled stuff after the fact. When you go on a typical, and I know there's no typical, but you're probably talking about, you're away for 30 days, right?
Yeah, at least 3 weeks. And of course, the expense in going on most trips, bare minimum is probably going to be 12 to 15,000. And then if you get into these bigger trips, you know, when you're going into the South Atlantic and that, because of the boat cost, So those trips are going to cost an operator $25,000-$30,000, and that is non-refundable. You put that money up front, and it's gone.
So you could be a mile away from Bouvet and have to turn around because of engine problem, and that money's gone.
Damn. Yeah, that is sad. But being away from home, because you're away from your family, you're away from your job, you're away from all your friends, and they don't know if you're ever going to come back. And when you really think about it, you don't know if you're ever going to come back either, because there's a lot can happen. You know, there's a lot of transportation where you're in cabs, where you're in airplanes. So all those things can go bad. And then everything on the island can go bad. So, yeah, there's a lot of stress on the operators as well as their families back home. Yeah.
So if Brian and I would have just approached you and said, hey, we're thinking about going on a de-expedition to X, what would be your top level advice?
Take plenty of beer. No. No, I you know, that's a good question, Bill, because we all have to get started. And no matter what we're doing, we have to get a job. We go on a de-expedition. And in order to get in these high-profile trips that some of us have been lucky to be on, you need to start on a small trip and prove to the rest of us that you can really do sideband, CW, FT8, ready, whatever it is. And I always tell people, just get your family or two operators, two families would be ideal, I think, and go to the Caribbean. It's easy to get to. It's generally safe. And go down there and spend a week to 10 days and play some serious radio. Then you can come back and your resume has started. Then when you want to get on to a big trip, then you can go back and brag to that big D expedition. Hey, I can be a team player. I'm a hard worker. And I like to join up. And that's how it worked for me.
I did a lot of
little individual trips.
It doesn't sound like you trade any of them to not go. If you look back, you don't regret any of them.
No. I think I probably would do them all, maybe except Swain's. Swain's, there was a lot of us really thought we was going to die there. We were hot. And you can only drink so much water. And on my trips, I had everyone carry a nail apron to put your tape in and your pliers and your water. But we're out on a beach that is 128 degrees, and that water is hot. So all day, for 2 or 3 days setting up these antennas, we really were just drinking hot water. Yeah, it was tough.
And then what, up mid-90s at night?
At night in the shade, it was 98.
Wow.
Jeez. 98. So you really can't sleep. So
you weren't able to sleep either.
Yeah, you go out and do all this work and no sleep. You just, it really takes its toll on you. Sure does.
Holy cow. Well, listen, I wanted to do this in appreciation for all you've done for Ham Radio and all your de-expeditions, and you've certainly helped me over the last 15 or 20 years, and there's different things I'll do, and somebody will say, who taught you that? And I'll say, well, it was either Joe or Jay. I don't know which one, but one of them did, so I'll give them both the credit, and I'll give you a great example. 9Q1 was on this week on CW. And the pileup was like 5 to 10 up, and I went up 12 and pretty much got them, you know, within a few minutes. Really? Yeah, just, and you've always said that, find out where it is and go above it. And I'm always tempted to stay in that upper third or bottom third, and I finally got to the point where I'll just go above the whole thing. And
you got to get out of that mess. Oh, yep. My God, yeah.
You got to do it. So. Yeah. You know how much I personally appreciate you doing this, and Brian, I appreciate your time on this, and I'm hoping to rope you into this more often, Especially now that you're the DX forum guy. I mean, Joe and I are going to be coming to you saying, hey.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah, I think I'll still be coming to Joe a lot for some connections. Don't worry.
Well, and certainly Don. I can't tell you, Joe, I'll bet it was in 10 minutes I sent that email and he fired back and said, I would love to be part of this. And I said, it's not a huge celebration as much as I want it to be a round table and I want you to be included. But, you know, I'm driven by Joe's agenda because I know him. I know the stuff he's done. And but Don was all over it. And then the next email minutes later was, do you have a picture of the nun outfit? I did, but I couldn't find it. That's why I asked you. And I didn't want to give away who might be surprised. So
I never thought about him.
Yeah, I didn't think he would, so that's why I did it. But in any event, again, I really appreciate this, and
you're certainly welcome, and it's been fun doing.
Yeah, I really thought it would be, and it appeared Don got a kick out of it too. So I'll give him a call tomorrow and thank him properly. And if you're on the podcast, Don locked up and then eventually dropped off, so I didn't have a chance to thank him appropriately, but. And if you are listening via the podcast and not YouTube, I will put a picture. I'll take this picture of the nun's outfit and I'll put it in the show notes. So you'll be able to see that, but we'll take care of that. So you guys stay safe. Thanks again for being part of this. And I'll look for you down the log.
Oh, you're certainly welcome. It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Boy. I sure hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. That was a real hoot. I'm thinking about doing that again pretty soon. Thank you for joining us on this edition of the DX Mentor Podcast. I would like to thank our sponsors, of course, ICOM America, The Daily DX, and the Southwest Ohio DX Association. You won't find anyone more committed to DX than these sponsors. And of course, I'd like to thank our gurus who joined us in this podcast, Don Greenbaum, N1DG, Brian, 88FD, and of course, Joe, WAGEX. I would love to have your feedback, answer your questions, and provide help with any DX or amateur-related, radio-related issues that you may have. If you need clarification on something or you just have a question, email me at thedxmentor@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter using @thedxmentor handle. You can watch this presentation in a week on YouTube under the DX Mentor channel. Please drop me a line if you've achieved an all-time new one, received recognition, maybe just got your license like Bob McCullough did, or you have a DX event that you would like us to mention. I would be happy to do that. 7-3 for this episode, and again, thanks to my XYL, Karen, for her love and support.